Well, we took a little bit of a break, Brandon, because we are living in a virtual hellscape, a literal fiery inferno here in Los Angeles. So we've taken a little bit of a couple days off to sort of regroup, and we're back. It is Deferred Collusion. Brandon, it's crazy times over here in LA. But, you know, how you doing? Are you safe? Is your family good?
Jess, I'm all right. I am removed from the flames about some 20-odd miles, but I know you're a little bit closer. I've been driving to your neck of the woods for work. I'm a blue-collar guy doing some construction, but yeah, I'm out in the West Hills area, and I've been seeing the flames from the Hearst fires, from the Altadena fires, from the Palisades fires, most notably. Jess, like you were saying, we've had a little pause in recording. Viewers may not know, but you and your wife are actually right on the border of the evacuation area right now, right?
Yeah, we got very lucky the other night when it was the Palisades fire was climbing up over, getting closer to the 405, closer to Sepulveda, coming over the hill into the San Fernando Valley, which is where I live. Got very lucky that we were. When they put out the evacuation orders, we've been following this app called Watch Duty. So for those of you who don't have it, probably have it by now, but that's a good app to follow for this. We were literally one block outside of the evacuation zone, or the evacuation warning zone. But I did see like my neighbors kind of going into full blown panic mode because we could see the flames from my backyard. I could see like over the mountain. Just the flames coming, and I drove up the hill just to get a closer look, and it was like, okay, yeah, now it's very real. Lucky. The firefighters, they seem to have kind of done the job. Like, I didn't see any smoke today. It seems like they kind of really handled that side of things, so shout out to our first responders there.
And shout out to all our first responders, firefighters, EMT, coppers, everybody out there doing their part. Hey, and our linesmen, our DWP guys, you know, that's Department of Water, Cal Water, all those guys working on the hydrants, getting the pumps going. You know, power went out that feeds pumps that pump water up the Palisades into these giant reservoirs. And famously now, those reservoirs ran out of water, and the taps went dry, the hydrants went dry, and it's awful business out there. But you know. A lot of people fighting and pulling together, and it's been great to see communities coming together, especially in a massive place like LA, where people are so divided. Speaking of which, World Series hero, World Series MVP, and LA's favorite son, Freddie Freeman, and his wife, Chelsea, have donated $300,000 to fire relief efforts in LA, $100,000 each to the LA Fire Department Foundation, the Pasadena Fire Department Foundation, as well as the Salvation Army. And not to be outdone, but Chris Taylor and his wife Marie are matching donations up to $5,000 each through their CT3 Foundation, which is all going to the LA Fire Department Foundation. So it's just beautiful to see our favorite ball players still looking out for the city that's looked out for them so much. But Jess, on a brighter note,
we can move on to more fun things. Just stay safe, everybody. Yeah, this stay will safe, be over everybody. Soon. Hopefully, just stay safe.
On a brighter note, I do have a quick Korean edit and retraction from our last episode.
Yeah,
I did get a little big for my britches, and I gave you a bonus Korean phrase, Hajima.
It was a bogus Korean phrase, if you ask me, Brandon. Yeah,
this guy.
Yeah,
but I said it meant shut up. It does not mean shut up. It means don't do it or don't do that. Like Hajima.
Yeah. Hajima. Yeah, right. Yep.
But I blew it. You know, it was a bonus. I was trying to get. You know, I was swinging a little too hard.
Yeah.
Call me Yasiel Puig because I hit it right to the wall and walked my way to first. And it's off the wall. I'm thrown out at second.
Oh yeah.
But I do got one more Korean phrase for you, and this one's on the house. I know it. I love it. It's one of my favorites. Jess, no yepo, and no yepo means you're pretty. So there we go.
Okay.
That's my Korean lesson for the episode. But back to the MLB.
So hold on. When I say Hey Sung Kim, I go up to him and say No hippo, Hey Sung, No hippo.
No hippo, and he's gonna look at you and he's gonna go like, "This guy's
freaky.
Knows Korean."
Yeah.
And thank you. I do feel pretty, and we should all feel pretty. I think that's great. I think men don't tell each other that they're pretty enough.
We gotta boost their confidence in any way that we can. Yeah.
Jesse, the MLB has banned a couple of fans from attending their product this year. Your favorite guys, the Mookie Betts guys, we'll just call them.
Yeah. I already forgot the guy's name. Austin something. Yeah.
A couple of New York Yankee fans who famously, as was quoted in the article, mauled Mookie Betts for a foul ball, are banned indefinitely from attending any Major League Baseball games. Jess, you went pretty loud and proud about your "so there" for those so-called fans. How are you feeling about this ban?
Yeah, look, at the time, what I was most upset about, obviously, was the images of people grabbing an athlete who's just trying to make a play in the middle of the biggest games of their career. Like, I get that you're a fan and everything. You want to help your team and all that. But I mean, I perceived it as like physical assault. Once the guy was like holding his wrist back, because at that point Mookie had no means of defending himself.
Yeah.
So, but what I was most mad about was, like, I'm not going to name names, but other outlets were kind of turning him to a little bit of a celebrity.
Little folk hero.
They brought him into their studio. Barstool brought him into their studio and started like recreating it, and literally gave this dude his 15 minutes of fame as if it was funny. And the only reason why it's not funny is because, like, Mookie Betts didn't react violently to being assaulted like that. Like, if Mookie had, like, punched the guy in the face, that could have been a very serious situation. And so that's why I got upset, because you're, like, you're rewarding dumbass behavior. And there's just going to be more dumbass behavior in the future towards athletes, which feels like it's kind of, like, at an all-time high. I know we were talking about this a little bit off-air, but, like, because of social media and being able to get your little, like, athlete interactions onto your Instagram stories or whatever, it seems like there's, like, a lot more of this going on where people just feel empowered to fuck with the players on the field or whatever. And I know you have a theory that might be connected a little bit more. There might be a little deeper layer here than I'm giving it credit for.
Well, Jess, I think you're probably nailing it more simply and probably more accurately. I do think there is a little bit of this, like, oh, let me get my moment. Let me see if I can poke the bear and, you know, make it growl, kind of, you know, this whole, I don't know, social media phenomena, whatever you want to call it. But I do feel like there is this added level of, I don't know if it's entitlement or whatever, but as sports betting has become more and more prevalent, you know, it's just a swipe and a click away on your phone. I feel like people are emboldened to talk some more shit, you know, and some of it's not even good. I was watching some guy talk shit. I think it was to, like, a football Giants player. And it was like, or maybe it was a Ravens player that was a Giants fan. And it was like,
I saw the video. It's like in a back parking lot, and it was or something like that. And it was like through a fence. And
yeah,
I know what you're talking about. Who was?
It's terrible, I feel like we're at, like, a day and age where, like, major athletes are gonna have to start going to, like, whatever training WWE, like, wrestlers go through to, like, handle fans and, like, handle fucking, like, I feel like athletes got to run kayfabe now so that they don't fucking deal with players' bullshit. But, you know, with connectivity being what it is, you know, you're just a tweet away from your favorite athlete and telling them they fucking suck instead of having to buy a ticket, sit in the stands, and wait for him to have an at bat or take the field, you know, which is, I think, the way God intended baseball to be played, you know. Mm-hmm. You have every right to boo somebody in the confines of your stadium, but outside of that, I think you're asking for trouble. Now, Jess, that does not excuse touching a player, and I think this is where, you know, the proverbial jumping of the shark is. But we saw it in L.A. We've seen it in San Diego. We've seen it in other markets. Hello, Monsieur Pussycat. But people throwing things onto the field. Dude, I have this like vivid memory of like the 2019 playoffs and like guys throwing this one specific guy like throwing his like Kershaw jersey out into the field, like, fuck you, dude. Like, just, you know, like,
yeah,
there's this weird, unhealthy like rage with fandom, and it's I know it's not anything new. But it definitely feels like it's more prevalent than ever.
And like, I think you're onto something with the sports betting thing, because I like, just from my experience working in combat sports, is you're the fighters. There's the most amount of sports betting goes on in fighting, like in boxing and in UFC. There's so much sports betting in that. It's like a huge part of it. I mean, like, it's a huge part of that industry, and the most toxic like online activity towards an athlete is probably in the MMA space. In boxing space also, of how fans talk to fighters. And I do think you're right. It's because like people lose money betting on fighters, because like, you like to bet on the underdog, right? Because that's where you're going to make the most money. But you bet on guys that don't really stand much of a chance to win, and then you hate them for losing. And it's like, okay, well, whose fault is that here,
right,
guy? So yeah, either way, you know, I am like a little conflicted about them being banned forever, but I do think you're right. Like, you got to set a precedent for this, because otherwise people are just gonna keep doing it. So whatever, definitely. Austin.
Well, Jess, let me ask you this.
Whatever, fuck off.
Yeah, you fucking dork. But let me ask you just to put a bow on it. Do you think the punishment fits the crime?
I mean, I think that I was a little conflicted at first, but I kind of did some soul searching on it. I don't know what else you could have done if you're trying to set any sort of precedent. If you just don't care, I don't think we would have heard about it. And I think that they could have not done anything, and then nobody would have said anything about this again, unless those guys end up on television, right?
Yeah.
So otherwise, I just don't think that anybody would have cared. But the problem is like, you know, that the Yankee fans go to a Yankee game, and he let's say he's not sitting down the right field line, but now he's sitting, you know, in the bleachers. Somebody's gonna want to take a photo with him. That photo's gonna go viral, and then people are gonna start giving MLB shit for letting him in the stadium. So they were just like, fuck it, rip the band-aid off, let's move on.
No, I think you're definitely right about that. Dude, it's definitely one of those things you got to get ahead of. But speaking of getting ahead of, Sports Illustrated recently released a little prediction in the NL MVP race. I know, we haven't even thrown a pitch in the 2025 season, but there is a prediction for your 2025 NL MVP. Is none other than Fernando Tatis Jr. Yes, El Nino is being predicted to win the NL MVP over Shohei Ohtani and New York Met Juan Soto. Jess, how does that sound to you? Do you think this is in the cards?
I think we should here's what I'm going to say, because I think we should spend very little time on this because we're so far away from the regular season, because I do want to do a preseason episode where we break down our MVP picks and stuff like that. What I will say is everybody before last season, before 2024 started, everybody was saying this was the year for anybody else to win the MVP because Shohei Ohtani was not pitching. Because he wasn't pitching. He was just going to be a DH, that he was likely not going to win the MVP. And so everybody was saying the same exact thing last year about other players. Maybe not Tatis, but because Shohei wasn't pitching. Well, Shohei's pitching this year, and he just won the MVP as a DH. So now you're telling me he is not the favorite over Tatis when he, in a year? It doesn't make any sense to me. I have no idea who's making this up. I think it's a bogus article. I think it's just clickbait, and I do think Tatis absolutely has a chance to win the MVP. Like, sure, of course he does. He could have an amazing year and he could go off, but like, you're telling me that like Shohei wasn't a favorite last year, but you're telling me that last year was a better chance to beat out Shohei, but you're telling me this year he's not the favorite? Like, what the fuck is what's the logic behind this? I don't get it. I don't know,
because he's not going to be able to steal as many bags, dude.
Right. No, you know what? You're all right about that. He's just going to be 40-30 instead.
Well, Jess, there are a lot of people talking about Shohei's
and maybe win the Cy Young. Although he's probably not going to pitch till May, apparently.
Well, Jess, there are people that, you know, think that he's going to be able to just come step back into form. But there are others that think that, hey, there is no precedent for a pitcher coming off a second Tommy John being dominant. So there are naysayers who, to their point, have a reason to doubt Shohei,
and that's true,
and his pitching ability. You know, we need to look no further than our own Walker Buehler last season.
I was just going
to
bring that up. Yeah,
he came up throughout the regular season. Granted, all that goes away with a pretty stellar final few performances in the playoffs and notably the World Series. But also, you could say, hey, well, medical technology has never been what it was today, and that the surgeries of today are vastly different than that even just of a decade ago. So maybe that means that, hey, Shohei does have a few good years left in that arm. And like you're saying, maybe it's foolish to bid against the big dog in an MVP race.
Yeah.
But all that to say, Tatis is only 26, dude. And I know people want to poo-poo him for the old ringworm cream incident, but he's still a freak talent that went from a questionable defender at shortstop to now a platinum glover in right field.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he does win MVP one of these years, but maybe I would be a little less surprised if it's...
I'm listening. I'm letting my cat out. He's being annoying.
Yeah, dude. Get that cat out of here, dude. Pussy, dude. I'm just kidding, Jess. You're going to see that when you're editing. I called your cat a pussy, dude. I'm sorry. Not creative or original.
This is a... We only have the best... studio set up here at Deferred Collusion. Sorry about that. My cat, I hope it wasn't too annoying for the people watching, because he was meowing for the past 10 minutes, and I have a feeling he was driving people crazy. Anyways, let's wrap it up here. Yeah, I agree with you. He could absolutely win the MVP. You know, a little funny aside here, because, yes, Buehler, we mentioned Walker Buehler, he said that he didn't feel normal for, like, the majority of the year, and that, like, took a long time for him to just start feeling normal again. And then he pitched really well in, like, the last, like, month and a half of the year, other than, you know, getting blown up in game three against the Padres in the NLDS. Yeah. But that was also a little bit of bad luck was mixed into that. Shohei still has not confirmed that he got Tommy John, by the way. Like, they still have – his team has still never confirmed that's what it is, even though everybody assumes it was Tommy John. I think the Dodgers might have confirmed it, but Shohei himself has never confirmed it. Like, when he signed his contract with the Dodgers, he was just like, oh, yeah, I just got, like, a surgery, and he has, like, this big fucking scar on his arm now. So
it
I wonder
gruesome.
If he got some, like, Winter Soldier surgery or something. Like, I have a feeling Shohei's going to be – he's going to be solid. He might not be what he was. He might not be throwing 100, but I could still see him throwing 96 with, like, a nasty split. Like, I'm not worried about him being bad. I do think it will take some time. But here's the thing about the argument. Let's move on after this. If it comes down to war, like F war, Shohei's going to accumulate war as a pitcher. Even if it's only like a few war, even if it's only like 3 war, let's say, he's still going to accumulate 8 war, 7 war as a hitter. And then you're still getting like 10 war out of him, which is going to be more than anybody else. So if we're going off of war and F war, it's going to be Shohei. So,
Jess, one last thing before we move off them. I just got to ask you, who wins an MVP first? Fernando Tatis Jr. or Juan Soto? Don't think, just answer.
Fuck, that's a good question, Brandon. That's a really good question. I'm going to say Juan Soto because I think that Tatis is on a better team. I think Tatis, like, I think this is like the argument of when you're on a deeper team, you get less credit. Soto is going to stand out above the rest on the Mets. But I would say if we're basing it off of who wins the MVP next year, like who's more likely to win it next year, Juan Soto or Tatis, I would say Tatis.
Ooh.
Because okay. I think that the Padres will be better than the Mets.
I like
that. But if we're basing it off of over the next few years, who's more likely? I would say Soto because I think Soto is going to stand out on that team where his numbers are going to be just so much better than Lindor's. You're going to be like, oh, well, this is the clear number one, which is why I think he went there, to be honest, Brandon. Anyways.
If you heard that here first, don't forget to hit the promo code in DraftKings.
Oh, and like and subscribe, guys, in case we haven't said this already. Like please. And subscribe.
Sincerely, I know we got some new followers and stuff, but it really helps a lot.
Yeah, and comment.
Engage with us. We love you. Anyways, Jeff.
So, Brandon.
Goodbye, dude. You see I got my Dodger hat on. We had to say goodbye to another drafted Dodger. We saw him come up, meteoric rise through the minors. Looked like he was going to be the next freaking, I don't know, Ken Griffey Jr., dude. The kid's bat was so nasty, dude, from that left side of the plate. Didn't necessarily translate into the big leagues all the time. I think the Dodgers maybe at times asked a little too much of a young Gavin Lux. You'll remember he was out in center field in the playoffs. They had this outline for his body after he nailed the center field wall. Then goes through the transition to center infield, middle infield, blows out his knee on a horrific play in spring training. And you know what, Jess? That's going to be one of my lasting memories of Lux as a Dodger.
The press conference?
Exactly. And not just as a Dodger, but as like a big leaguer. And when he's just in tears saying, you know, he thinks it's everybody's, you know, dream to be the starting shortstop for the Dodgers, and his voice is breaking. And you could hear in so many ways, like the death of the kid inside of him, you know,
yeah,
like a childhood dream and the realization that's not going to be exactly what he wanted it to be. But Jess, after a disastrous start to the 2024 season, in a year that we were talking about, like, does this guy have the yips? He comes back for an incredible second half. I think has like a near 900 OPS in the second half of the season. And in his last at bat as a Dodger, drives in the tying run, which would set the stage for Mookie Betts to hit the winning sac fly to win the Dodgers World Series and Gavin Lux his second World Series title. But Jess, like I said, we are saying goodbye because he has been traded to your Cincinnati Reds for an outfield prospect and a draft pick.
Yeah.
How are we feeling about this move, Jess?
So
you thought it might be coming.
I did. So all offseason, I have been pretty consistent in saying that all of the moves that the Dodgers were making were consistent with the idea that Gavin Lux was not in the plans.
Yes.
And I do think that the Dodgers didn't have a very good poker face in all of this. Because obviously they wanted it to work with Gavin Lux. They gave him in 2023, they were giving him a shot to be the starting shortstop of the LA Dodgers. That's why when he gave that interview, he was so upset, referring to the interview in spring training in 2023 when he blew out his ACL. He was crying because he knew the Dodgers were giving him this big opportunity to be the starting shortstop for a World Series favorite team. And like the former number one ranked prospect in all of either in all of baseball or in the Dodgers system. I forget which one it was, but it was one of those things and one of the top rated in all of baseball. And that ACL tear, you're absolutely right. I think it took a lot out of the wind out of his sails, not only like as an up-and-comer, but just like him personally. And it showed in the next year's spring training. His confidence was shot in that spring training last year. It was just non-existent. But the kid does have a good bat. He just has trouble with power contact. I think the kind of pop the Dodgers kind of require, where like they might actually value a guy like Chris Taylor over a guy like Gavin Lux, even though Taylor has more swing and miss. He just has more pop. He has better barrel percentage, things like that, which the Dodgers really do value at this point and the way that they view things philosophically. So I was expecting this trade. I'm sad to see him go. If they didn't make the move, I would have been very happy to see him be the second baseman and to give him another shot, because I do think he showed let's just say this. First half was awful last year. Second half, he had a 900 something OPS in like the last 2.5 months of the year. He was awesome. He had the game tying sac fly in game 5 of the World Series, which set up Mookie Betts to get the game winning sac fly to win the World Series. We're always going to remember that. But I think that the writing was always on the wall, and there are a lot of Dodger fans out there who are a little disappointed or frustrated with this trade. I've seen like splits on this. Like, some Dodger fans are very happy with this trade and some are very angry with this trade and don't understand it. And I think what some Dodger fans have to understand is the Dodgers kind of gave their poker face away. As I mentioned, they weren't going to get a lot for him because
Lady Gaga.
It was just Yeah, well, it was just obvious that he was, other than Chris Taylor, he was the odd man out here. It was one of those two guys, and especially depending on what's going on with Kike Hernandez, I know that there's some other rumors regarding him right now, but Chris Taylor's contract just is not tradable. I see Dodger fans are like, why not just trade Taylor? It's like, okay, yeah, sounds fucking easy. This isn't MLB The Show, dude. Like, he had a bad couple of seasons. Nobody's going to take that contract. Gavin Lux is team controlled for 2 years. Much easier to make that deal. And remember, they got a guy, and in the trade, the Dodgers got Mike Sirota, who's an outfield prospect that the Dodgers drafted a couple years back, but because he decided to continue going to college and not sign with the Dodgers, they weren't able to retain him after drafting him. Now, the Dodgers trade Gavin Lux to get the guy they wanted to get a couple years ago at a position that they need more than the one Lux was playing. So it actually is a slam dunk trade for the Dodgers, and they get the number 37 competitive balance pick, I believe is what it is, and which we know what the Dodgers can do with those sorts of draft picks. They're That's just right. going to, if whether they become an asset or not, it's going to be a trade asset or an on-field asset. So,
and Jesse,
I miss you, Gavin Lux. I love you, but this was the right move.
Absolutely. And Jesse, to your point, and this is something that I found a little interesting. This is actually very much Andrew Friedman's move, right? So Friedman, while he was with the Tampa Bay Rays, was very famous about Mookie Betts being his like white whale, his one that got away. And you know, ends up in LA, has an opportunity to trade for him, doesn't miss, right? Now we've seen that time and time again, right? Makes an aggressive move for Freddie Freeman, makes an aggressive move for Shohei Ohtani, and now you have these cornerstones of a team that seem like this unbeatable juggernaut. But Jess, with this move, coming back to Mike Sirota, it does feel a little reminiscent of that, of Freeman seeing something and being wowed by somebody and going, you know what? We have an opportunity to get better. The Dodgers do lack depth in the outfield. Because, like, who's our main center fielder, right? Tommy Edman. But the Dodgers are comprised of a platoon team. If you got Michael Conforto in left field, Teoscar in right, center field is like, okay, Edman, but we got Edman for versatility, so does that mean James Outman's going to be there? Andy Páez is going to be out there on a regular basis. Right, I mean, right. I think I trust Outman's defense a little bit more than Páez, but obviously Páez's bat is better than Outman. So, you know, bringing in a guy like Sirota is obviously future depth, and this is Friedman 101. And then you add another pick, and like you said, you know, now it's something. The Dodgers traded Michael Bush last year and got Zaire Hope, and I think somebody
No, no, no. Zaire Hope and Jackson Ferris, and that's exactly what I was going to bring up, too.
Yeah, and they're two of the Dodgers, like, I think, top five.
Top 10, for sure.
Top 10, for sure. I think. But, yeah, prospects. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a move that, like, we were talking about with the signing of Ha-Seong Kim. You could see that you're right. Was it Ha-Seong Kim? Ha-Seong Kim?
Ha-Seong Kim. I got shit in the comments for that, too. You weren't the only one who fucked up your Korean. I was calling him Ha-Seong Kim. It's actually Ha-Seong Kim. Thank you to whoever that – it was a nice young lady who corrected me. Thank you for correcting
me.
Thank
you. We are always welcome, welcoming to constructive criticism. We are always trying to get better. But, it just feels like, again, the Dodgers are – in this weird realm where they're like a few steps ahead of everybody. And we saw that with the Blake Snell signing. And then, you know, the numbers that came out after for Max Fried and Corbin Burns, that Snell contract looks brilliant. Even that Michael Bush trade looks brilliant because the Dodgers are blocked at first with Freddie Freeman.
Yeah.
So it's a trading from depth, right? A surplus of talent. And it just seems like they're just making that candle continue to burn a little bit longer and longer.
No, this is what the Dodgers did with Yasiel Puig and Matt Kemp.
Yes.
They were traded to the Reds.
Alex Wood.
And that trade led to the Mookie Betts trade because they got Alex Wood and then they also got Jeter Downs. And then Jeter Downs was flipped to the Red Sox along with Verdugo as part of the Mookie Betts trade and Connor Wong, I believe, as well.
Yes.
So this is what they do. And it's 3D chess, man. You may not like it in the moment, but it's always with the intention of either, hey, we're going to get the most out of them on the field, or we're going to get the most out of them in future trades. And that's the way you have to look at it. Because Gavin Lux, love you, man. I wish you nothing but the best. You're going to do great things in Cincinnati. I believe in it. Like, I think you're going to be a good ball player. It's a perfect park for you. But I'll always remember in that, you know, that game, that windy game, was it game three of the NLDS against the Giants in 2021? I thought Gavin Lux hit like a game-tying home run. Everybody was blaming it on the wind, that the ball didn't go out. Who was it against? Who was the pitcher for the was it Gossman? I forget who it was. No, it wasn't Gossman. But he hit a ball. It was like the seventh inning or something, and he hit a – or might have been the ninth or the eighth inning, whatever. Mm-hmm. He hit it, and it died at the warning track, and everybody was blaming the wind. But I've seen over the past few years that he hits a lot of these hard-hit balls that just kind of die at the warning track. And I think it's going to serve him well in a stadium like the Great American Small Park as opposed to Dodger Stadium, which is much more friendly to pitchers. So, and I know that that's like a little bit of my like fandom seething through into the screen here, but Dodger fans shouldn't be so mad at this. You should actually just think of the big picture here of what they have in the moment and what they're going for in the future. And I think more assets in the farm system is the best possible thing for this franchise, especially when you're spending millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars that are like lastly, deferred 10 years from now. You know.
And lastly, I think it's best to remember the good times with Gavin, with Walker, with Corey Seager.
Favorite Gavin Lux moment off the top of your head, 10, 15 seconds.
Man, it's tough. It's tough not to say that that game tying sack fly in the World Series. But honestly, I think it's going to be game four in San Diego. I believe there was a pitching change, and Gavin Lux was the first batter of that pitching change. And whoever was up before him, I think homered, or maybe not, but Gavin Lux homered in San Diego over that right field wall.
Off a lefty, too, I think.
Off a lefty, yeah. And it just was one of those things that it, like, cemented the crowd being gone, and it was like, oh no, we're going back to LA, like this is a game five. But yeah, it just felt great to see him connect with one. And I don't know, I'm sure there's a bunch I'm forgetting just over the second half of the season, even just like basic defensive plays where I'm like, fuck yeah, Lux, he didn't make that stop. But how about you, Jess?
I think it was probably the press conference where he said he wanted to be a Dodger, the shortstop for the Dodgers. That was pretty cool to see. And I like that you mentioned the his imprint on the wall after smashing the wall.
It was endearing.
It was fun. There was a little rookie, like young guy hazing in that moment. But hey, you know, speaking of, you mentioned that home run against the Padres. It's been a bad couple of months here for the Padres since getting eliminated by the Dodgers in the NLDS. Because apparently they're having some drama. We're a little short on time here. I know we both got to go, so we can just sort of burn through these last few. But just the Padres apparently are having some drama between Peter Seidler, the former deceased owner, rest in peace. His widow, Sheil Seidler, is suing Peter Seidler's brothers for control of the team. This is pretty bad considering they are already in a little bit of like a financial flux situation where they are losing money. They are trying to like raise money to basically pay off some of their debt because they did go on a little bit of a spending spree over the past few years trying to win a World Series before Peter Seidler died. And so Sheil Seidler released a statement filing a lawsuit against the brothers. In this statement and this lawsuit is wild. I do think it's very well versed by Sheil Seidler's lawyer because it accuses the Seidler brothers of sexism and racism. It accuses them of not wanting a woman of Indian descent to control the Padres. Sheil Seidler is of Indian descent. And it also accuses the brothers of potentially considering relocation of the Padres to a different city, the brothers have already refuted and put out a statement saying that this is bogus. Brandon, I mean, just do you think there's a there? Is this just like posturing by Sheil Seidler to sort of get some, you know, stipulations that she wants, you know, for financial reasons? Or do you think that this is actually like a real problem, that this is going to potentially derail some of the Padres' progress that they've made?
Honestly, Jess, I think it's already derailed a lot of progress that they've made. I think it would be safe to say that San Diego went from like a basement dweller to a premier location for free agents kind of overnight, right? Like think of the 2018 San Diego Padres. Who is their leader? Will Myers?
Yeah. Machado, I think at that time. No, it was Dodger Machado. You're right.
That's what I'm saying. So the signing of Machado, Tatis, the big extension, Yu Darvish, the trade for Dylan Cease, Juan Soto, and the cavalcade of stars that have come through there from Josh Hader, Tanner Scott. I know just a couple of big name relievers right there. Seth Lugo, Ha-Seong Kim, Will Myers, like I was saying, Jake Cronenworth. I know he got a lot of shit, but he had a great year there. Now Rafael Devers, which is crowned maybe the worst contract in baseball. But Jess, what I'm getting at.
Xander Bogaerts.
Xander Bogaerts. Yeah, sorry, yeah, Rafi yeah. Devers still in Boston. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, I knew what you were doing. I got it.
You know what I was going for. Yeah. But they've built a winning culture. Say what you will. We've talked about it a few times. The 2024 Padres season was the most lucrative in terms of gate and ticket sales of all time. Highest number of attendees in any regular season, including playoffs, even though it was an abbreviated run. But Shell, Peter's widow, has even claimed that community, that culture that they've built has been crucial in the attraction of free agents, including one Roki Sasaki.
I know. I saw that he's mentioned in the lawsuit. Roki Sasaki himself is actually mentioned in this lawsuit. Wild.
Yeah, which at first glance made me think, oh, man, there's no way in his right mind is Sasaki going to be signing with him now. But maybe there was everybody thought there was a handshake agreement with the Dodgers. Maybe that meant there was a handshake agreement with the Padres.
No, what I think it means, sorry, you can continue after this. What I think it means is that what they were saying is that this is she very cleverly, very strategically mentioned the most hot market item that the Padres could actually afford this year because they are dealing with financial issues. Who's the one big free agent they can land? It's the international signing bonus guy that's not going to cost them a lot of money but is a potential impact game-changing talent for the team that they really, really, really need. So she very strategically put Roki Sasaki's name into that.
Well, there is some 3D chess going on, tapped in a little bit on baseball Twitter and whatnot, but some Padres fans are saying that she's a plant related to the O'Malley, former Dodgers owner, right. Walter O'Malley, to their bloodline.
Did you see AJ Pierzynski on foul territory basically saying accusing her or the daughter of being like secret Dodger fans?
Yeah, because they were like wearing a Dodger jersey like at a game once.
He's asking somebody about it. I forget who it was, and he's just like, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. Evan Drellick, the reporter for the Padres, he's like, dude, I have no fucking clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, it all felt very Game of Thronesy to me. I'm like, dude, this is some like Lannister Baratheon shit.
It is, yeah.
It was all dorky. Yeah, but I mean, without getting too much into it, like, because obviously it's all hearsay for us, it's a bad look. But I think what it does do, Jess, is I think it gives us our answer as to why the Padres have seemed so inactive this postseason. And it's because there are some like turbulent waters beneath the surface.
Right.
As a Dodger fan, I've seen it before with Frank McCourt and his divorce. And it's disgusting what can happen sometimes with legal happenings and how it can affect your favorite franchise. So I'm not wishing that on the Padres. I hope this gets resolved. And, I hope they get active again. And I hope for a long successful run in San Diego, but this ain't gonna lead to a lot.
And I think that the relocation claim stuff, we mentioned that the brothers already kind of disputed this.
Yeah, I don't think they came out unequivocally and released a statement that there has never been any conversations about relocation. Whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Why would they? The Padre fans, like, as a Dodger fan, I'm saying this, it's one of the most loyal and incredible fan environments going in sports right now. The idea of relocating it kind of makes no sense. It feels a little bit like, even though some of her claims might be true, I don't know. I'm not an insider with them. It does feel like that was a little bit of, like, worse. She's digging the needle in a little bit to get the fans riled up on her side against the brothers of Peter Seidler. That kind of felt a little strategic in my eyes. If I'm being just objective here, it felt a little dirty to bring that up. So,
and whether that was dirty because she had to or didn't have to, I think is the important distinction that we won't know until more information is released. But Padres fans, tell us how you're feeling. I hope it's all good, and you guys sign somebody soon. Fuck.
Yeah, and I mean, I if Padre fans, let us know, like, are you team Seidler? Are you team Sheil? Are you team Peter's brothers? Let us know.
John and Bob or whatever. Really, their names are.
Really, but, no idea. But hey, we do have a couple of signings that we could discuss here, Brandon. It's just
Well, speaking of the NL West, dude, we got a future first ballot Hall of Famer looking to take his talent to the NL West. One Justin Verlander signs a one-year, $15 million deal with the hated ones, the San Francisco Giants. This is interesting to me, Jess. Giants great Tim Lincecum is currently 40 years old, and Justin Verlander is 41.
Yeah, and Buster Posey, who just signed Justin Verlander, is 4 years younger than Justin Verlander. As the new GM, or president of baseball operations for the is he GM or president? Did he take over?
I believe he's GM. He took over for Farhan.
Right, but Farhan was president of operations.
Oh,
so
I thought he was GM.
I don't know. Buster Posey. Is he GM? Buster Posey
is GM.
President of baseball operations.
I'm calling GM.
He is. Nope. New president of baseball operations. Sorry, man. It's essentially he's the GM, but that's just funny to me. I mean, Justin Verlander, man, like he won a Cy Young 2 years ago with like a 1.87 ERA or something with the Astros after getting traded back from the Mets, where he signed this like 2 year, $100 million deal or whatever it was.
Yeah, insanity.
And then it just goes off, wins the Cy Young. And then last year, I believe he was coming off of an injury. I could be wrong. Did he get Tommy John again?
Yeah, after he won the Cy Young, I think he got another Tommy J.
I know he got it before.
Before?
Justin Verlander, Tommy John. I'm just curious. He got it in 2019.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so it's silent. Okay. But yeah, no, so he was traded back, and he wins the Cy Young, and then he was like, I think he wasn't like really, he kind of struggled a little bit. Last year he was bad. Bad. They didn't even include him on the playoff roster against the Tigers. Like, he was just off the roster. But I will say this, and I saw Dallas Braden making this good point. Like, this is kind of the perfect ballpark for an older pitcher like him who's losing a little tick of velocity. It's a big ballpark, especially if you're, like, susceptible to the fly ball home run.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to get a lot of those in San Francisco. I think it's kind of – look, it's not going to the Yankees or the, I don't know, the Padres or something, like World Series aspirations. Mm-hmm. But the Giants, I do think, are a good enough team – that is competitive enough where this is kind of perfect for where he is in his career and his like last swan song. But I just think it's funny that this is like another example of one of those players like Ken Griffey Jr. on the White Sox or, you know, like Wayne Gretzky on the St. Louis Blues. It's like,
dude, even for Giants fans, Jeff Kent as a Dodger. I love Jeff Kent as a Dodger. Yeah. I was mashing bing bongs at second base.
But it's just so random. You're just like, wait, that guy was on that team? What?
Dude, this is that. Like Randy Johnson on the Giants. Like, very.
Yeah. Yeah. But hey, does it make you feel any differently about the Giants?
Yeah. I guess I would put it this honestly, way. Honestly, yes. Yeah. Because I think it's a pretty interesting rotation. And Jess,
it could be good.
You got Logan Webb at the top. And then I know they got, Robbie Ray, you know, another Cy Young winner, another, arm repair guy.
Kyle Harrison.
Kyle Harrison, and then who's the reliever?
They have Jordan Hicks, who was converted from being a reliever to it, and then you add Verlander.
Verlander.
And they, I know that they also have another couple of guys that they could play around with, but what I think it does for them.
Do they still have Camino Duval in the back end of their pen?
Yeah, but he's apparently a trade Camilo. Yeah, he's apparently like a trade chip. There's like rumors about that. Wait, is he a free agent?
I'm not sure.
No, I feel like he's a genuine. We only do the best preparation here at Deferred Collusion, where we know all the free agent updates for you. But I do believe Camilo Duval will be on the team. He is on the team. Yeah, that's what it is. There's a debate right now about whether or not Camilo Duval will be the closer or Ryan. God, I forget his name. He really came on last year as like a really nasty reliever. And there's debate about who's going to be the closer this year, but Duval will be on the team. Yeah.
I dig it. Well, Jess, unless there's anything else we feel like we really need to get into.
Ryan Walker. Yeah, that's who it is.
My boy, Rye Walk, dog.
One thing I want to say really quick, just to do a little Dodgers housekeeping here. Jack Flaherty says he's willing to take a short-term high AAV deal because apparently the market's not as good for him as he had hoped. Because he just wants to come back to the Dodgers, because we did see him say at the parade, I'm never leaving. I never want to leave. But he was also a little intoxicated that day, so take it with a grain of salt. But
the beer was flowing like wine, dude. Yeah, you know, that championship glow. He was smoking on that pack. Yeah. But, I mean, hey, for Jack, we all thought that this was going to be his year that, you know, he's really trying to get that last, bag.
Yeah,
but if he can get it back for a season or two and, you know, move on from there, I think he's going to take it. And I think, Jess, honestly, I think this all but ensures his return to Detroit. I think he's going to get a high AAV, maybe one-year deal. And then,
man, that sucks. I feel like his playoff performance like screwed him a little bit because he was really good last year. And Dodgers don't win the World Series without Jack Flaherty last year.
Definitely not. Don't. But Jess, yeah. I do think there was a reason that the Yankees balked at that trade, right? And they said it was back. And it's hard for me to believe that he wasn't that inconsistent because of some sort of physical ailment. And the back would make sense to me if it was barking at him some days and other days it wasn't, you know?
And you know what? Hey, man, Jack, champion forever, even if you don't sign with the Dodgers.
Champion forever, dude.
Dodger fans are going to you'll never buy a beer in this town again, let me tell you.
We love you.
Hey, speaking of this town, we got to go, but everybody be safe. If you want to donate, help out to any of the firefighters, you know, they have there's a lot of different fire departments you can go help out. There's Red Cross. There's a whole bunch of different fucking places you can donate. So just check out, and hopefully this fucking insanity ends soon. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like we said, you guys, thank you for joining us and helping us build a little community here at Deferred Collusion. And speaking of, make sure you check on your own community. Just make sure everybody's safe, whether that's a text or just, you know, helping out the old lady that lives next door to you, get some groceries in their car, whatever you can do to help. We're all in this together. And like we said earlier, thank you guys for like and subscribe and share, and please continue to do so. And as always, we'll be back next time with a little Deferred Collusion. This is my man, Jesse Sinclair Rowe.
Whoa, dude. Sinclair. You think you're labeling me like a big media company here. That's
I know you guys up in the hills. You got your TV money. Yeah. I'm over here living in the slums, dude.
You're small business. I'm big tobacco. All right.